This is Carol Windley. I'm going to read from a story in homeschooling called Sand and Frost. She met Declan in the lineup at the cafeteria. They sat at the same table and talked about how gross the food was and how not worth it their courses were. Declan was a pale boy with a mass of curly brown hair and a beard that glinted like copper filaments. He touched things and gave off blue sparks. He was 19. He wanted to be a filmmaker, but as far as she could see, his chief activities consisted of lying around in his room and drinking beer. They both drank a lot of beer. Declan showed her one of his projects, a portfolio of black and white photographs of people standing around on a beach, singly or in groups, dressed in dark flowing garments that contrasted in an interesting way with the grainy drift and subsidence of sand. In his photographs, he said, human forms were analogous to celestial bodies in a void, the space between humming with weird energy. Declan said she made him think of Maria, the real one, the good Maria, in Fritz Lang's Metropolis, which was a real trip. That woebegone little bunny face, he said. He pinched her chin. I love that face, he said. Can you feel that, he said? Can you feel that energy? He brought his hand closer to hers until their fingers were suggestively entwined. Tell me if you can feel this, he said, pressing her hand firmly to his crotch. How's that for energy, he said, getting a little carried away, snorting with laughter until, overcome with his own high spirits, he had to release her hand. Lydia said she didn't think they were that kind of friends, and Declan hooted and rolled around on the floor. Not that kind of friends, he repeated. Jesus, no, not us. She smiled tolerantly. Declan was good at acting older than his age most of the time, but when the mask slipped, he was his true young self, younger than young, a boy whose skin broke out and who frittered his student loans away on leather pants and cannabis and called home every day to talk to his mom. She knew these things about him, but she was willing to put up with him because he was her absolute equal in wasting time, in falling short, in underachieving, in screwing up. The appealing thing was, he had no idea this was so. In his mind, he was already a sought-after filmmaker, nothing left to do but kick aside the fetters of youth and inexperience and penury. Lydia ended up sleeping with Declan, more out of loneliness and horniness than anything. The truth was, she considered him less a boyfriend than a sort of human antechamber. Or did she mean decompression chamber, between her yearning for dear, mysterious Dr. Schelling and a more tenable, less febrile way of being. Declan said she wasn't like anyone else he knew. Is that a compliment or an insult, she'd wanted to know. He just laughed his bored, ugly little laugh. In May, he was going to Ireland with his parents. He said he might never come back. He might get a job there, making documentaries or something. I could come with you, she said. I could fly over and meet you there. Yeah, maybe, he said. She was sitting on the floor beside him. Classes had been canceled due to a snowstorm. Declan was going through his portfolio of photographs, complaining that this one needed cropping, that one was overexposed. They were crap, basically. No, they're good, Lydia said. She pointed at a photograph in which a lone figure stood tensely, indecisively on the sand. Who's that? She said, and he said, how should he know? But you took it, you must know, she said. It's one of the professors, isn't it? What are you talking about? Declan said. Leave it alone, you're getting fingerprints on it. She knew the figure in the photograph was Julian Schelling, robed like a monk, his face concealed, but not from her, not from her. Could you move? Declan said. Could you just please quit crushing me? He kept sending her down to the vending machine in the lobby for munchies and pop. She ran back up the stairs, trying to rid herself of a nearly intolerable excess of energy. It was the snow, the unnatural silence, the disagreeable yet poignant smell of wet boots and microwaved popcorn, and the cavernous pulse of rap music coming from behind closed doors.